south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I hear dozens of reasons from people who say they want to get the hell out of Dodge in the worst way, but they just can't bring themselves to do it because of certain reasons or conditions. And one of those main reasons is they say, Johnny, I'd love to leave, but I don't know anybody in Latin America. I'll be lonely. I'll miss all my friends. And even those expat gonna-bes and wannabes who have a significant other who would supposedly come down with them. So they would have someone. They wouldn't be lonely. I'll still hear that excuse, but I'll miss all my friends. I'll miss my boys or girls. As if they're the only friends you ever have or will have, and you'll never make a new one in your life. Let me ask you this. How many times have you changed best friends over the years? Hey, we all have stages in life, right? When you're a certain age, like you're a teenager in high school, whatever, you have certain best friends. Are they still your best friends? I doubt it. You probably don't even get a Christmas card from them anymore. Man, am I showing my age or what? You know, my mom still sends Christmas cards to everybody. That wouldn't work here in Latin America. The mail doesn't deliver. So then what happened to your high school best friends? I bet long gone, right? You go to college, you pick up another best friend or two. Where are they now, that guy or gal you suffered through the indignities of those frat parties with? And if you hook up and get married, that significant other is supposed to be your best friend, right? You hope. Then you divorce and they're your own worst best enemy. Then you get a job, a career, and you pick up another best friend or two. Then, of course, you get another job in another company. You know, according to stats, the average person changes jobs. Professional career person, that is, changes jobs 6 times in his life. So then where are all those best friends you made on the job? Where are they now? Come on, admit it. Previous best friends fall along the wayside. They may be still good friends, but not best friends anymore. So when people say, Johnny, I really want to get the hell out of Dodge, but I haven't pulled the trigger yet because I'll miss all my friends. I think that's bullshit. Not a good excuse. And what about that group of friends you have right now and your best friend? Are some of them sort of negative? They bring you down? Then they're not really your friends. You just have to be honest with yourself. You really don't need friends whose benefits no longer outweigh the drawbacks. You know who I mean. The friends who only call when they need something. The ones who make you sort of feel a little bad when you fail and worse when you succeed. Friends that borrow money from you and don't pay you back. Or borrow physical stuff like clothes or tools and forget about it. Or when they do, it comes back in worse shape than when you lent it to them. Do you have friends who say shit behind your back? Those friends that are, you know, into misery loves company? Whiners and complainers? And how about those friends who encourage you to do things you actually don't want to do? But you do it anyway because they egged you on, they insisted, and you don't feel good about it. Have you had the balls to ditch the ones that got on your nerves or didn't do anything for you? Guys or gals who were just window dressing and didn't add anything to the conversation? Sure, we've all had a few high-quality friends. It is about quality, not quantity. Some of us have only had one or two very good friends. You know, I've had lots of buddies who, when they got married, their wife cut them off from their friends. I bet if you analyze it, you think about it, most of your friends are just acquaintances, nothing more. You can count your friends by who shows up in the hospital when you're really sick or on moving day, or when you're trying to round up buddies to help you build a fence or paint your house. The sad truth is you really know who your friends are if you have a flat tire at midnight and your spare's flat too. In that moment, when you're thinking who to call, the first person or two on your list, if they're not family, they're your real friends. Oh, and I remember someone telling me once a long time ago, friends who are envious or jealous of you are not your real friends. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, if one of your friends wins the lottery or buys a Ferrari, you can't be a little jealous. We all have a little bit of that baked in our personalities. You know what I mean? There are so-called friends that'll actually sabotage you because you're doing better than they are in some way or other. Because they've got a perpetual or slow-burning jealousy or envy gene. It's related to the word Schadenfreude in German. It means taking pleasure in someone else, like a friend's, misfortune. By the way, and this is the point, most expats, once they've been down here in Latin America for a while, they tell me their best friends are not in the USA or Canada. Not anymore. They've mostly closed the book on that chapter in their lives. In time, they admit their best friends are the people they've met here in Latin America. They're serious about it, too. But the dirty little unspoken truth is about 95% of gringos and expats, no matter how long they've been down here in Latin America, their new friends and their new best friends are not Latinos. They're other gringos and expats. Let me tell you that statistic again. About 95% of all the new and best friends gringos and expats meet once they get down here are other gringos and expats, not Latinos or Latinas. Mostly because of the language barrier. Gringos and expats rarely know enough Spanish to have a deep conversation with the locals. And secondly, there's a big education, knowledge, and wisdom gap between gringos and expats and the Latinos and Latinas they meet. That said, man, you just wouldn't believe how many cool expat guys and gals there are down here. So many curious, interesting, fun, and dynamic people all in one place. Not to say you won't meet interesting, smart people up in the States. It's just that most of them won't have that curious wanderlust gene. You might call it a chance-taking gene that most all expats have. Though I admit, these days it's much easier to adapt as a gringo expat than it ever was. With the internet, cell phones, Walmart, and Shopko down here, Amazon, eBay, you've got Google Translate, which expats use all the time, though it does become a crutch. By the way, I hate Google Translate, never use it. Don't use Google either. Stuck with a perpetual Gmail address, though. I picked that up way before we knew what we know now about Google. Anyway, these days when I have to translate something, a big document, and I don't want to do it by hand, I use ChatGPT or a translation site called Deep Translate. And if you run all that stuff through a VPN and an anonymous browser like StartPage or DuckDuckGo, and use a disposable email address that you can get with StartMail or ProtonMail, they can't collect any of your real data to track you or sell you. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, the point is, if and when you move the hell out of Dodge and get down here to Latin America, you will accumulate a brand new group of interesting, intelligent friends who will motivate you in directions you never even thought of before. On that same subject, here's an email from expat AJ. He says, Johnny, tell people that if they really love being around people who have something interesting to share, then go to Latin America and start talking to expats. They have the best and most interesting stories. He says, that's why I listen to your show, John, not for the latest narco news out of Mexico, but for the expat stories. They're interesting and sometimes hilarious. AJ says, when I look back at my life in the States, it was dead boring compared to living here in Latin America, and drab in comparison. Black and white versus technicolor. He says, I was always one of those guys who liked to do some exploring, but it's kind of boring exploring alone. It's no fun when you don't have someone to share it with. He says, once I got down to Latin America, I found there was no shortage of expats who would jump on board the exploration train with me. You could be sitting around a little expat coffee clutch and say, hey guys, anyone want to go take a hike in the jungle this weekend or climb a volcano or go to the beach? When you're with a group of expats, you'll always have takers. All right, thanks for that, AJ. He's certainly got the right idea, which brings us full circle to the subject of regrets. Yep, regrets. Those things you start thinking about more and more as you get older and older, which can, in many cases, really depress you. In fact, I just read a recent article about deathbed regrets. Turns out there have been a lot of studies or polls done in nursing homes. You know, people in their last years of life, you might say they're sitting in death's waiting room. They're experts when it comes to life's regrets. Turns out, according to this article, the top five regrets that people shared on their deathbeds with duty nurses in homes for the aged are, number one, they said overwhelmingly, I wish I'd had the will and perseverance to live the life I wanted to live instead of the one others expected of me. Number two, the geezers said they wish they hadn't worked so very hard, taking more time to smell the roses, so to speak. Number three, they said they wish they had had more courage to express their feelings instead of keeping their mouths shut when they had something to say. Number four, they said they wish they would have ditched their bad negative friends when they had the chance. Number five, they said they wish they had let themselves be more open to happiness in the moment and not continuously project ahead to bad things that might happen tomorrow, because tomorrow's unpredictable and may never come. You know, that makes me think of two really popular guys I knew in high school. Nice guys. They both end up getting married, had kids, right out of high school. Then some years later on the grapevine, I found out they were divorced after coming out of the closet to their wives as gay. Man, I'll tell you, in high school, they hid it well. But just imagine what a tragedy that is. How many lives were ruined. All that trauma they caused the wives, the kids, and the extended family. I'll bet if you're over 50, you had some friends or acquaintances in high school that went through the same thing. Fact is, many years ago, when I first came to Guatemala, first year I was down. I was taking a Spanish class from a tutor who spoke no English. We'd meet every morning for an hour or two in a little outdoor coffee shop. I'd buy him breakfast, and I'd read the paper in Spanish, and he'd correct me. Well, there were a couple more gringos doing the same thing at the same restaurant, same time every morning. They, too, had tutors doing the same thing. And I met this young Belgian guy. He must have been 21 years old. Actually, he was half Canadian, half Belgian. We ended up partnering up in a bar and restaurant business. It did not work out well. I told that story in a previous show. Anyway, being that he was my business partner, he told me his life story one day. Told me that his Canadian mother divorced his Belgian dad for, get this, another woman. His mom came out as a lesbian when he was 11 years old, he said. Confused the hell out of him, caused lots of psychological damage, he said. Just a case in point. Anyway, just imagine the huge number of people up in the States, Canada, in the first world, everywhere. Suddenly, they wake up and they're old, they're 80, and they recognize and realize that they've lived a false life. Or maybe not exactly false, but incomplete. By the way, staying on this regret theme just a little bit more, I just saw a meta-analysis of the most common life regrets. It showed that for Americans, U.S. people anyway, not completing their university education or picking the wrong career because someone else, like their parents, insisted on it. Well, as it turns out, one-third of people, 33%, listed one of those two things as their biggest old age life's regret. Other regrets included getting married way too young, had kids way too young, they regret that they partied too much in school, and regrets for dropping out of college. Of course, we know these days getting a degree might not help you get ahead at all. It'll just get you into a big debt hole you'll never be able to get out of. The thing is, those regret questions were asked to older baby boomers. For them, going to college and getting a degree worked out well. So I suspect when Gen X, Y, and Z are asked that question when they get old, they'll have a completely different set of regrets. Probably just the opposite, like, why didn't I become a carpenter or a plumber? oh, why did I get that stupid, useless degree in journalism or gender studies or psychology or business admin? A waste of 4 years and 150 G's in debt. By the way, Tony Robbins, love him or hate him, has what he calls a rocking chair regret test. You ever hear of it? He says no one wants to be 85 years old, sitting in a rocking chair and regretting the things that you didn't tackle out of fear, trepidation, or some other excuse. He says a very good life can be measured by how easily you can sit in that rocking chair at 85, thinking about that great life journey that you took rather than complaining about what you coulda, woulda, shoulda done. But most people at 85 sitting in that rocking chair wallow over lost opportunities. Which begs the question, how is your plan B coming? It's never too late, you know. I've even seen gringos and expats move down here to Latin America with what you might consider under normal conditions up in the States an insurmountable handicap. Yet they pull it off and are glad they did. And when you meet them, you think, how'd they do that? How's that possible? But they do it. Fact is, not so long ago, I took a Mediterranean cruise. And you know, if you're on a cruise, you run into the same people all the time, right? Even though there might be 2,000 or 3,000 people on the ship, you see them when you're walking and hanging around, and you see them out at the ports when you're sightseeing, too. Anyway, on this last cruise I took, there were two guys, both 60-something years old, both legally blind, using red and white walking sticks to get around. They were buddies, a team, just those two, sharing a room on the ship. I'd see them on the ship walking around, one behind the other with their walking sticks, you know, poking the floor, checking the angles, getting around pretty good. They were just a couple of buddies traveling together and hanging out. Now, oddly enough, well, maybe it wasn't so odd, I'd see these guys walking around in places you'd never expect. Rome, Athens, Pompeii. And I'd be walking around checking out the museums or the cathedrals, whatever. Lo and behold, I'd see those two blind guys walking on down the street at a pretty good pace. One behind the other, having a great old time. And one time they were sitting at a table right next to me at a coffee shop in Mykonos, Greece. And you know, you get to talking to people, I always do. Found out these two guys were expats from Salt Lake City, Mormons, living in Portugal on the Algarve. And guess what? They told me they were on their fourth cruise. So come on, all you leakers out there. You with your lame excuses why it's just impossible for you to get the hell out of Dodge. Yet these two guys with one of the best excuses, they're blind, got the hell out of Dodge and are living their best lives in Portugal. Please, talk about all those able-bodied wimps who have all kinds of excuses and just won't pull the trigger. Oh, by the way, did you know that the subject of life's regrets is so popular, there are websites where you can post your own life's regrets. Sounds kind of depressing, huh? Not only that, there's a best-selling book called Damn, The Reflections of Life's Biggest Regrets. Come on, you don't want to be a statistic like that now, do you? By the way, did you know at my expat insider seminar, I've had blind guys and paraplegics who went on to become permanent expats? In fact, I just got an email from Mr. D, a very smart guy who's also blind. He's lived in a number of Latin American countries as an expat. He says, Johnny, and I'll paraphrase this a bit, he says, I've been considering moving to El Salvador, but I'm thinking the weather is too hot for me. I don't very much like Antigua, Guatemala. I thought of Chela, Guatemala, that's X-E-L-A, pronounced Chela. But frankly, the attitudes towards blind persons in Guatemala make me think of looking somewhere else. I know nowhere will I find attitudes like those in the U.S. and the East Coast, where I grew up. But those halcyon days are no more. And living in Denmark or Switzerland are out of my range economically. Mr. D says, even in those countries, things are not what they used to be. I'm 78 right now, he says, so prospects for fulfillment are not promising, though my health is still pretty good. He says, Johnny, you've lived in many places, so you might be in a good position to tell me about some possible alternatives. How, for example, is the Dominican Republic, the DR, considering my previous comments? Looking forward to hearing from you, Mr. D. Well, yesterday I wrote back, and here's what I said, but I think I misunderstood him a little bit. You'll see in his next reply to what I wrote. I said, the truth is, Mr. D, I've been almost everywhere in Latin America, and the Dominican Republic seems to be one of the least prejudiced countries I've ever been in a lot of different ways, too. There are mixed-race couples galore, and it's never mentioned, and never a rumble or a stare. But as usual, there's a huge gringo advantage, and they are pathologically addicted to thinking if they could only get to the USA, their troubles would be over. It's the land of milk and honey. Since, Mr. D, you asked about the Dominican Republic, I wouldn't say they are completely unprejudiced or unbigoted, though. No one is. The fact is, there are so many illegal Haitians, even Venezuelans, that the natives are getting restless and pissed off. For one thing, there is almost no mixing between the Haitians and the Dominican residents. And to be perfectly on PC, the Venezuelans are more industrious, smarter, and more educated than the noticeably much lazier Dominican guys. That causes friction in the population, too. And the Dominican girls and guys still prefer lighter-skinned partners. And you can tell that by the fact that when someone has a lighter-skinned kid, they become instant stars and princes and princesses of the family. And for the rest of their lives, everyone in the family fusses over them. You also hear that color preference thing get tossed in idle conversations over and over again, just like in every other Latin country. Like, for example, yeah, Johnny, did I tell you my cousin Juan is a mechanic in case you need your car fixed? Oh, by the way, he's a tall white guy, almost as white as you. I'm thinking, did he really have to say that? Oh, and I hear statements like the following from the locals, too. Hey, Johnny, didn't see you at the gym last Saturday. I couldn't go. Went to my cousin's wedding. She married a Canadian. A guy as white as you. Their kids are going to be really beautiful. And I'm thinking, did she really have to say that? So you hear that stuff in the DR like you do everywhere else in Latin America, even though the DR, like I said, is the least prejudiced and bigoted country I've ever been to. As far as the mating, dating, love, and marriage thing, it's absolutely the United Nations. I mean, in the best sense of the term. Then I wrote, anyway, Mr. D, as far as how they treat blind people in the Dominican Republic, since you asked. Ever so often, I see a blind guy walking along a busy street with a long, white, red-tipped walking stick cane. And it never fails. Someone walks by, a complete stranger, grabs that person's arm and helps him or her along. The only thing, Mr. D, it's like El Salvador, very hot nearly all the time. Sometimes even worse than El Salvador. Those are my two centavos anyway. Well, wouldn't you know it, I fired that response off to Mr. D just yesterday. And he answered right back. He said, Johnny, I don't disagree with anything you say. I'm also sure, as you say, people will want to help a blind person at a street crossing. However, Mr. D says, the discrimination that I'm talking about, that people with disabilities face, is of a very different kind. People in Guatemala don't believe people with disabilities can do anything for themselves. They think people with disabilities are mental retards. The idea that people with disabilities can be lawyers, scientists, authors, teachers, or anything useful is so pervasive that people who are themselves blind or can't walk or are deaf often hold these same discriminatory attitudes about themselves. He says, I've been surprised that even educated persons find it hard to talk to me or even go out of their way to engage with me. Of course, one faces those attitudes in the U.S. too, but not to the extent I find here in Guatemala. He says, I found much less of this kind of discrimination in Argentina or Cuba. These attitudes were much more prevalent when I was in my teens, but that's changed a lot in the U.S. and to a lesser degree in Europe. So anyway, that's Mr. D's response, and I'm sorry to hear that people have that kind of attitude towards people with disabilities. And if Mr. D says he experiences different levels of it in different countries, it's got to be a cultural and lack of education thing. Though, like he said, it has improved in the States and Europe, though it seems to be backsliding a bit. All you can do is hope for the best and keep the faith. All right, switching gears now, an interesting email from Armando. He says, Johnny, they're holding a big Bitcoin halving party in April 2024 at the Decameron All-Inclusive Hotel and Resort in Salinitas, El Salvador. He says, Johnny, have you been to that resort? What's it like? Well, Armando, you know, in the first couple of years I was doing this show, I reported on that particular resort because I'd been there more than a few times. So far, it's kind of the only all-inclusive beach resort in the Guatemala-El Salvador region. In fact, it's a chain of resorts that first came out of Colombia. There's at least 50 of them, Decameron resorts. They've got them all over Latin America. I've been to a few of them. The one you're talking about in El Salvador, two in Colombia, and one in Panama. Believe it or not, they've even got one in Haiti. I think it's the only all-inclusive in Haiti, and it might not even be open anymore, considering Haiti's sort of a war zone under martial law right now. Wait a minute. I just looked it up. Yep, it's open. God, who would travel to Haiti to go to a resort, huh? Now, about that Decameron resort in El Salvador. Now, I've been to lots and lots of all-inclusive resorts in Latin America. And if you rate them on a 1 to 4 star basis, I'd say it's a 2-star resort. In no respect is it luxurious. In fact, the rooms are very basic. But you get what you pay for, right? Well, you'd think so most often. I used to think that resort was a very good deal for the money, but no longer. Back in the old days, before the COVIDiot thing and all that, I must have stayed there at least 10 times. Mostly because the price was absolutely right. They have a little office in Guatemala City and would have specials a couple times a year where you could book an all-inclusive room for two, you know, double occupancy, for around $100 to $110 a night. For two, that's all you could eat and all you could drink. And like any big all-inclusive resort, they had 5 or 6 restaurants, buffets, and snack joints going 24/7, with nicely manicured tropical grounds and a big gymnasium no one used, lots of pool and beachside activities and a big theater, all kinds of water sports, the works. And for $100 a night for two, it was a steal. But now, some years later, as Armando has brought the subject up again because they're having a big Bitcoin halving conference there, it's not the deal it used to be. I assume most of you guys and gals know what the Bitcoin halving is, right? Every 4 years, the block reward of mining Bitcoin gets cut in half, making the mining of new Bitcoins twice as hard, twice as expensive. And always, a few months later, contributes to a big pump in the price. So for people who own Bitcoin, the halving is a memorable event that happens every 4 years and worth celebrating. I'm sure when it comes, there'll be a big hootenanny at that Decameron resort. Now, along with Armando's email, he sent me a link to the Decameron and what it costs to go there now. It's around $200 a night. That's $100 more than I'm used to paying. Though, like I said, I look for the deals. And since a couple times a year, you can get the place for $100 a night. If it's twice that much, it's really no deal, but your call. The fact is, for $200 a night, there are some really great 3- and 4-star all-inclusive hotels in Latin America. But if the Bitcoin halving party is at the Decameron, that'll be the place to be. But they're gouging you a bit on the price. They're not doing you any favors. Now, I'm not saying that Decameron Salinitas is bottom of the barrel, though it is very basic and rough around the edges. And the food, although there's plenty of it, is nothing to write home about. By the way, you longtime listeners have probably heard me mention this before. practically every time I've been to that place. I was generally the only gringo there. And you know what would keep on happening over and over again? Some guy would walk up to me and speak pretty good English, a Latino. He'd be looking sharp with Nike shoes, gold chains all blinged out, and he'd say those magic words, "Where'd you from?" And I'd tell him and say, "Where'd you from?" And he'd say New York or Miami or Vegas, whatever. But he wouldn't be from those places, not really. He would be the Latino that snuck into America a long, long time ago, maybe 20, 25 years ago even. He was the guy that beat the odds, the success story, the guy who now owns a glass company or body shop or mechanic shop. He's the guy who's sending back the remises to the family, the poor folks back in the home country, Guatemala or Salvador. So what's he doing at that resort? Well, he's putting on the dog for all the poor folks back home, treating the folks he's sending remises to something they could never do for themselves. I've seen and heard that story so many times. Guy sneaks into the States, starts a little business, does well, gets legalized, and now he's the big kahuna in the family, the rich cousin up in the States. The only thing is, they don't have much in common with the poor folks back home anymore. They get bored really fast with small town talk about grandma and the family, who are still living in that poor barrio in the home country. Which is why when they're at the resort and they spot a lone gringo like me, they try to buddy up. Because in truth, they have more in common with me than they have with the family they left some 20 years ago. Fact is, I've heard them tell me they feel like a sort of fish out of water in their own homeland. It's strange. Their relatives usually don't like them much either because they're show-offs, but they like the remises. So they suck up to them. Though some of these guys, when they retire, they come back. Live like a king, build the nicest house in the hood, hail the conquering hero and all that. In a way, you got to feel a little sorry for them. They really don't fit in either world. Too sophisticated and Americanized for the folks in the barrio, but in no way homegrown Americans either. But one thing's for sure, their kids are pure homegrown American. They just sit around all day in their beach chairs, just glued to their screens, addicted to social media, especially Instagram and TikTok. It's their parents that took all the chances and the risks, paying off coyotes, sneaking into the States, and their kids, who had the luck to be born in America, are just as entitled as homegrown Caucasian Gen Ys and Zs. And if you don't believe me, all you have to do is go to an all-inclusive resort like the Decameron here in Latin America. Keep your eyes open and observe, and you'll see what I mean.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.